Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinions, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this week's RealityCast, a guest will be on to explain why contraception access is an economic issue. Fox News almost tells the truth about emergency contraception and then goes back to lying. And Bill O'Reilly seriously has a problem with outspoken women. Feminist writer Jara Hodge has put together a nifty series of videos explaining feminism and clearing up misconceptions called Feminism FAQs, and I highly recommend using them to shoot down people spouting misinformation or asking what feels like a dumb question. Like, for instance, her take on slut-shaming.
Slut-shaming refers to shaming a woman for being or appearing sexual. It comes from the outdated idea that women are not meant to show that they desire sex. It often means criticizing a woman for wearing clothing someone else might consider provocative, and it sometimes leads to blaming women for asking for it when they get raped. It's worth noting that you can slut-shame someone without even using the word slut. And it happens so casually that it can happen to almost any woman or girl, regardless of whether she's had sex.
The whole series is great, and she's very measured and reasonable. For a brief, shiny moment, I actually thought that Fox News was reporting on an issue of reproductive health and rights without lying. And let me tell you, I was stunned. I can't think of the last time I heard anything about lady parts on Fox News that wasn't a lie. If they were trying to describe what happens on your period, they'd probably be obligated to say you bleed out of your ears, just to make sure that they never actually provide straightforward factual information about sexual health on their network. But somehow, when Shepard Smith was reporting on a news story on New York City schools offering contraception to students for free, he managed to get all the facts straight.
13 city schools in New York City are now offering students free birth control, including Plan B or the morning after pill. It's part of an expanding pilot program that started last year, and officials report there's been little resistance here in the big city. They say parents at those schools that are involved had the opportunity to opt out, but that only about 1 to 2% of the parents did opt out. The rest of students at those 13 schools can now get the pill, the morning after pill, for free, and they don't have to tell their parents if they do. By contrast, the morning after pill is an emergency contraceptive that's supposed to reduce the risk of pregnancy if taken within a few days after sex. And it has no effect on women who are already pregnant.
That was a shockingly accurate part of the program. 13 schools are involved. Parents are generally supportive and only a few have opted out. By not opting out, parents give blanket permission to give their kids contraception at the student's discretion. Emergency contraception prevents pregnancy and doesn't affect already existing pregnancies, which is to say it isn't an abortion. I was super excited and wondering, why on earth did Fox suddenly start deciding to tell the truth on this issue? Is it because it only affects New York City? Then I kept watching, and it turns out that while Smith opted not to lie during this part of the segment, the producers made absolutely sure to bring Andrew Napolitano on. Napolitano is always eager and excited to lie about any and everything involving sexual health issues, and the lies were fast and furious.
It's not a function for the city to get involved with, that the city is basically removing from parents the ability to regulate the behavior of their children.
Lie number one. As Smith pointed out at the top of the segment, parents were given the opportunity to opt out. Only 1 to 2% did. Napolitano may not approve of these parents making this choice, but it's a lie to say that they didn't have one. But there's also the bigger lie here, which is the notion that parents have some sort of absolute authority to control the behavior of their children, even their teenage children. They really don't. Kids this age decide for themselves if they're going to have sex or not, and parents have limited options when it comes to dealing with that. And really, it's not their decision to make since it's not their bodies. Withholding contraception doesn't suddenly put them in control of the sexual decisions. All it does is put the child's health at risk.
Men and women receive these contraceptive devices. In the case of the girls, the morning after pill, an abortifacient is the word, actually kills the fertilized egg by expelling it within a couple of days.
Lie number two. As Smith said, emergency contraception is not an abortion, and saying so doesn't make it true. It not only doesn't affect existing pregnancies, but well-documented research that was widely reported in the New York Times also showed that it has no effect on fertilized eggs. Anti-choicers have been told this over and over again. That they continue to tell this lie demonstrates that they know that they're lying and they don't care. But it's a real shame to hear this lie right after Smith told the boring old truth.
The third issue is privacy. Children have the same rights of privacy that that adults do, and the schools have no business interfering in the parent-child relationship in something as intimate as sexual activity.
Lie number three, and a creepy one at that, since Napolitano seems to think that sexual privacy means sharing your sex life with your parents. Ick. I don't know about you, but in my family, we define private as meaning my parents don't need to know the details about my sex life, and I don't need to know the details about theirs. I suspect my definition is much more the majority definition, which is why most parents signed off on this. Either way, Napolitano, who used to be a judge for crying out loud, is just lying, and I suspect he knows this. His definition of privacy is actually the opposite of what it is. To have a right to privacy means having the right to decide who to share private information with. He's claiming that it's the opposite, that a right to privacy means you should be forced to share it with your parents. That's straight up saying white is black and up is down. Teenagers do have a right to privacy, and it's not some weird upside down topsy-turvy right where it means they actually don't have any right whatsoever to privacy. It means the same thing that it does for everyone, which is that they get to control their private information, and that includes sexual private information. Napolitano carried on like this for a while, mostly telling and retelling the lie that emergency contraception is abortion, which it is not. Now a bunch of right-wingers are going to be running around claiming that New York City schools are handing out free abortions. Seriously, I wish. But really, it's not practical because they need to have more extensive medical facilities than they have or probably ever will have. But now half the country is going to believe it simply because Fox News apparently feels that they can never go more than 60 seconds without telling giant, whopping lies. I'd like to welcome Laura Lindberg to the program. Laura is a senior research associate for the Guttmacher Institute. She was one of the authors of a recent study where the Guttmacher asked actual women why they use contraception and is here to tell us all about the study. So can we start by describing your research methods and why you chose those particular research methods?
Sure. So we, in 2011, conducted a survey of women receiving services at publicly funded family planning clinics. And these clinics were drawn from 13 states around the country. And all of the clinics had been involved in the prior study we had done, so we had information about them, and we were able to draw a sample of clinics that we thought were most representative of those clinics offering clinics where providing contraceptive services were their primary focus. So that's the kind of sample that we're, the group of women and services that we're trying to describe here.
And why did you focus on family planning clinics?
We wanted to really know about the experiences of lower income women who have less options for payment, and how the structure of publicly funded services helps to meet their needs or the challenges that they face.
So what did you find when you asked these women why they use contraception?
Well, I think it's really interesting to think about the idea that we actually asked women. In the last year, we've heard so much in the news and so much conversation about contraception, but the people talking have rarely been women and users themselves. We've heard politicians, we've heard pundits, most often we've heard men talking about funding of contraception and should contraception be available. But we thought it was time to actually listen to women and who were using these methods about why they want to use these methods and why it's important or relevant to their life. So it was actually in their own words and their own voices hearing from women who are using contraception. So that's the frame of what we went out to try to get information about. And what we found, what women said over and over again in multiple ways, is using contraception is important in my life to help me have control, to help me deal with financial constraints, to help me have a child when my life is more stable, to make it, me have the best time to have another child or my first child, and to help me take care of the children I have right now, so that contraception helps me function.
So what I thought was really interesting was a lot of the emphasis from the women themselves was on affordability and economic issues. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So we've been hearing a lot of commentary in the past year that contraception is really a social issue. And certainly family life is social and personal, but family life and the decision to have a child and when to have a child is highly impacted by economics. And moreover, having a child impacts a woman's economic life. So what we heard from women was the economics about the need to use contraception. I can't afford to have a baby right now. My husband's unemployed. I'm unemployed. If I had a baby, I couldn't stay in school right now. I need money. The money I have is for the children I have currently. I need to take care of them. So real-world economics was impacting women's very personal decisions about contraception and when to have another child.
And you let them put multiple answers down, correct, for why they use contraception?
We did. And on average, women reported 7 different reasons that they were using contraception. I think there's commonalities across those reasons, but there's no one single answer for most women. In addition, I think we need to point to the fact that 41% of women said they were using birth control for other health reasons not related to preventing pregnancy. So there's a secondary motivation around health, whether it's to regulate periods, to reduce acne, other things of that sort.
So obviously, you know, these sorts of issues are kind of salient right now with the debate over the new mandate from the HHS requiring that insurance companies cover contraception without a copay. Do you feel that this information should impact that debate?
Absolutely. I think that real women, real lives need to impact that debate. It's not just an actuarial decision, and it's not just a political decision. It has an effect for the great majority of U.S. women who use contraception. And for lower-income women, the challenges to paying for birth control are great. And reducing the cost of that is going to, we hope, improve use.
So I think one more thing that I think is kind of interesting is I really was appreciated that not only did you guys find that women needed contraception to sort of afford the life that they have now, but that women were using contraception with an eye towards their futures, about their future employment, about their future education, about improving themselves. Can you talk some about this?
Family planning is about planning families, and I think the emphasis there is on the word planning. Women were looking into their future and saying, I want to complete school. I can't have a child right now. I want my children to have the best future they can, so I don't want to have a child right now. It's this long-term vision that women want to essentially get their ducks in the row currently to help for the future, and contraception is a tool for doing that.
Excellent. My guest today has been Laura Lindberg. You can read the news release for this study at the Guttmacher Institute's website at guttmacher.org. Thanks so much for coming on to RealityCast, Laura, and I hope that you guys do future research into contraception and why women use it.
Thank you. I'm sure we will.
As has been reported on this show repeatedly, conservatives in general and Bill O'Reilly in particular have this completely out of control reaction to the very existence of Sandra Fluck. It wouldn't be cool for them to relentlessly slut shame anyone, even if she sleeps with a new dude every night and is trying to set a world record or something. But the fact of the matter is that's not who Fluck is. But the way they carry on about her, you would think that's who she is. Truth is, we know almost nothing about Fluck. She's a law student and is engaged to be married. She's never spoken publicly about her sex life. And yet, here conservatives are acting like she just invented this kinky new concept of having sex without procreation. It's all very weird. Media Matters put together an excellent highlight of all the various ways Bill O'Reilly drags the conversation back to his favorite topic, his utter fascination with Sandra Fluck. For instance, he was interviewing Jon Stewart on September 18th about the Democratic National Convention. And despite the fact that Stewart didn't mention anything about Fluck, O'Reilly dragged the conversation there.
The editorial side. I mean, you had...
Oh, I thought they did. I thought they surprisingly did a very nice organizational job. Each night had a speaker of note.
Sandra
stuck
Fluck
to a certain mean.
You like Sandra, right?
I saw a little of her speech. I thought she was very well possessed. Did a very nice job there. I know she's a particular punching bag for you.
No.
God forbid a woman come out of nowhere and speak about an issue close to her heart without having
and her hand in my wallet at the same time.
Dr. Duke.
Yeah, I bet O'Reilly spends a lot of time imagining Fluck putting her hand in his pocket in order to grab at his wallet. I'm sure that's exactly what is driving his outsized obsession. It's not like we have any previous evidence that O'Reilly has a tendency to get focused on youngish professional women and go out of his way to sexually objectify them. No past incidents that lead us to believe that he's easily threatened by young women with power and that he tries to put them in their place by being inappropriate and gross. Nothing like... What's that? Oh yeah, I guess I forgot about that.
So imagine the shock when the powerhouse pundit was embroiled in a sex harassment scandal with a coworker in the fall of 2004.
According to this producer, Andrea Macris, Bill O'Reilly called her repeatedly, engaged in phone sex, and requested that she engage in phone sex herself.
So Macris slapped O'Reilly with a $60 million phone bill.
Earlier today, we filed a lawsuit on behalf of our client against her boss, Bill O'Reilly, for sexual harassment.
He said, whoa, that's crazy. I never did any of that stuff. But you don't have it on tape, right?
Huh, maybe he does have a problem with women, especially if women have power and confidence and are sure of their opinions. Sure does sound like he couldn't friggin' believe that a woman he was sexually harassing would do anything as crazy and outrageous as actually stand up to him. I wonder if we can detect some of this hostility to outspoken, self-assured women in his reactions to Fluck.
An America in which access to birth control is controlled by people who will never use it.
Now, Ms. Fluck came across as smug and immature, in my opinion. In fact, writing in the Wall Street Journal, Peggy Noonan called Ms. Fluck a, quote, ninny, a narcissist, and a fool, unquote.
But it's not enough for O'Reilly to burn with anger at a young woman whose main crime seems to be that she's young and smart but won't ever, ever have sex with Bill O'Reilly. When young women are smart and pretty but don't want to have sex with Bill O'Reilly, as we've learned from the past, he has to punish them by being really gross and inappropriate. Such as when his coworker wouldn't have sex with him and he responded by phoning her repeatedly and saying things like, well, I'll just play a clip of various actors reading the transcripts.
I want to take a shower with you right away. That would be the first thing I'd do. Yeah.
And I would take that little loofah thing, kind of soap up your back, yeah, rub it all over you.
I would start to massage your and you have a really spectacular
getting your nipples really hard. Oh, can you hold on? I got another call. Hello? Oh, hey, Mom.
So anyway,
I would take the other hand with the falafel thing and I'd put it in your...
Wait. He has a falafel in the shower?
You dirty falafel-eating loofah-scrubbing dirty girl.
So, in O'Reilly's various rants against Fluck, has he decided to be gross and inappropriate and objectifying in order to punish her for being smart, independent, and forever off-limits to use that birth control with him? The answer is, of course, yes. Ed Schultz played it for Fluck on his show.
I'm just wondering when Sandra Fluck speaks next week at the Democratic convention, what they're going to drop from the ceiling.
Goodness.
What would you do, though?
There goes that suggestive O'Reilly again.
I'm just pointing out there's only one reason this woman is speaking. One and one only.
One and one only. One reason why you're speaking. How insulted
are you by that, or are you not insulted by it?
Well, I think it's clearly offensive to see a bunch of guys sitting around laughing about dropping condoms on a woman. Obviously, that's offensive. But I try to just not pay attention to it, look past it, and focus on the policies that I care about.
She's right to blow it off and get on message, because that's what this show is for, in part. I can take the time to point out that Bill O'Reilly is a dirty old man who has serious anger issues towards women that he's pointing at Sandra Fluck for no other reason than she's an available target. And that kind of mentality is what's really fueling the fight to take away contraception coverage. It has nothing to do with religious freedom or whatever nonsense they've come up with lately. It's just pure resentment politics and lashing out at contraception because they believe that it's being used by young women who are having all this fun that they didn't get to have. Maybe that's so. Though I do imagine dudes like O'Reilly might have had better luck if their automatic reaction to women was to be nice instead of act like threatened bullies. And now for the wisdom of Wingnuts. I don't even know what to say about this edition. Limbaugh really outdoes himself on this one.
Bonafide research that says the average size of a penis is roughly 10% smaller than it was 50 years ago. And the researchers say air pollution is why. Air pollution, global warming has been shown to negatively impact penis size. Italian researchers. I don't buy this. I think it's feminism. I think if it's tied to the last 50 years, the average size of member is 10% smaller than it's 50 years, has to be the feminazis.
Presumably we did this with witchcraft, because we hate men or something. Because Limbaugh assumes that women find all men as repulsive as they find him, I imagine. Well, since he denies global warming, I guess it's no real leap to believe in witchcraft.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.